I'm Rachel Brown, and in all my time reporting on crime and courts for the ABC, I've seen a lot of monsters. But this crime chilled me more than the others. The man behind it, a pilot you wouldn't think twice about if you met him on the street. Someone who flies under the radar. Someone with secrets simmering just below the surface. Huntsman, the latest season of the ABC's true crime podcast, Unravel. Hear Unravel now on the ABC Listen app.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It took a long time for Lexi Crouch to realise she had an eating disorder. Because for Lexi, not eating at first seemed like a solution, not a problem. Not eating helped Lexi feel in control. It was a way to dial down the emotions that felt too big and too painful. But after being admitted to hospital at 16 and getting diagnosed with anorexia, Lexi realised she not only didn't want to eat, she actually couldn't. Lexi spent the next decade in and out of hospitals and eating disorder clinics. And by the time she was in her mid-20s, doctors told her they had run out of options. But with the right support, Lexi slowly learned how to make peace with her intense emotions. And it was by making peace with her feelings that let Lexi really heal her body. Lexi is now a clinical nutritionist, helping others with eating disorders. And she's written a book with psychiatrist Dr. Warren Ward, who's also been a guest on Conversations. It's called Renourish, a complete and compassionate guide to recovery from eating disorders. Hi, Lexi.
Hi, Sarah.
What are some of your earliest memories around food and eating?
I guess I grew up in a time where diet culture was quite prominent. And for me, I grew up in such a black and white linear mindset with good food, bad food. I guess there was a system where it was for reward and also punishment as well, because there was just such a highlight on how you were with your body and how you should look like. So it was from a very young age I developed a really disordered, I guess, relationship with food. It was demonized in ways. Going to birthday parties, you know, you were told not to eat too many sweets, and dessert was always seen as this indulgent luxury. I remember I would take condensed milk and go under my bed and eat that in secret as a kid. And I had so much shame and guilt, but I remember getting so much pleasure at the same time by having, I guess, I don't call food this these days, but I saw it as a sweet treat. So it was a bit like a reward, but a reward for what? So it backtracks that far that I had that relationship with food.
Do you ever, as a kid, remember feeling hungry and just meeting that need, or was it always kind of mixed up with feelings of good and bad and right and wrong?
I wasn't allowed to have hunger because I was always told that food was, I guess, this reward, or, you know, it wasn't seen as this is your nourishment, this is what your body needs. So I had this total disconnect from satiety of hunger. And every time I felt it, there was this guilt because I would equate eating as to gaining weight. And that was not the person that I needed to be in life.
What were things like at home when you were a little kid?
Yeah, I grew up with, I guess you'd say, a lot of pressure. And this was just the way that the world was. I guess growing up, you're taught to do your best, try your hardest, and eventually you'll get somewhere in life where you want to end up. Where the reality is, yes, this might be some good advice, but I had such a literal mindset. And the person that I am today was still the person that I was as a little girl. So I would take, every comment quite seriously and would want to be my best. And with that, I guess there were a lot of expectations to achieve, to perform. There was not much of a place for softness or, I guess, showing any sign of what society would see as weakness. You hear the word weakness, but really that's I'm taking a break to regather myself. So
when you were young, Lexi, like what sort of expectations did you have on yourself at school? Was it important that you perform well academically?
Oh, I was so hard on myself, Sarah. So I think from, I guess, almost the moment I was born, it was something where I would want to, I guess, push my potential and push my limit as much as I could. So I would show up in every era of my life, whether that was schooling, whether that was my sport, whether that was trying to be a good person and form relationship and friends, I would give myself 100%. And with that ingrained such also a negative mindset as well in me, because there was no room for me to give myself any love or softness as well. It was, you've got to go out there and perform, which that's just the way society told us who we needed to be.
Your mum got you to join Weight Watchers with her when you were 12 or so. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, this was in such a classic time of diet culture and just the way that we looked at health back then. So we had these pinnacles of Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, and so many weight loss programs that were out there. And with that, it was just looked at upon as trying to be healthy. So I was a kid, I was going about my life, and I was no different to any other kid in the playground, essentially. So a little bit of that, what you would call that puppy fat. You know, kids grow out before they grow up, and it was nothing to write home about. It was just I was in a growth spurt. However, this had just been passed down, I think, through family traditions to look at weight, look at your body, and essentially try and fit into this mold. So it wasn't that my mum was thinking that this was a bad idea. It was actually looked at as a possible solution as to being healthy and starting, I guess, my health journey.
Those programs have a lot of structure and rules, I guess, about eating, what to eat, how much to eat. Did that make sense to you? Was there a part of you that kind of appreciated that regimentation around food?
Oh, this is such a fantastic question, Sarah. I guess that was in such a formative time for me as a child where I was finding my way of the world. I was learning my thinking style and I grew up as such a people pleaser. You know, I wanted to do correct. I wanted to be perfect. I wanted to follow the rules because I was taught that that's how you're meant to be a good person. So from so young, I guess I fit myself into this linear mindset of data, numbers, figures, thinking that if I followed this formula, if I followed the pathway, it would all add up and my life would just become perfect. So that is 100% how I thought that I was meant to be in life.
Do you remember talking about dieting with your friends at school, even, you know, primary school or early high school? Was that part of the conversation?
Yeah, it was, Sarah. And the funny thing is, I wasn't the only one who was looking at food the same way. I remember being on the playground and I had some other friends and we were in primary school and we would be comparing lunchboxes of what was in there. And I remember one friend, she had this chicken and tomato one day and, you know, we must have made a comment of saying that's an interesting lunch. And her comment was, oh, my mum's on a diet this week and we're only allowed to eat chicken and tomatoes on one day. And we were all young and we were kind of taking that in. You know, you hear a comment because, you know, you don't really know who you are as a child yet. You're still gathering all this information from adults, trying to decipher what's correct and what's not. I remember watching myself step back and go, oh, that must be a healthy way of living. So I wasn't the only one that was kind of navigating the whole rules of diet culture that, you know, I guess have shaped many of my friends and women and men of, I guess, this age bracket I'm in today of 30s to 40s, where we did look at food that way from such a young age.
Do you remember people commenting on your weight as a kid? Was that part of the conversation as well?
Yeah, it was. And this runs really deep. Again, I wasn't an overweight child. I was no different from, you know, I look at my daughter now and I look at the kids at school. This is a normal growing part of life. But I did receive names sometimes, and it wasn't from outsiders. It was more just kind of close, I guess, niggling names. I think I was called Podgy growing up, and I would get very defensive, like I was trying to defend myself. And I guess I would step back and I saw people laughing at me. And inside, I remember reacting because I'm a child at this point too, saying, stop doing that. You know, don't call me that. That's not nice. And the sounds just got louder. So while everyone on the outside was getting louder, my inner world was becoming more shut down and defensive to going, there must be something seriously wrong with me.
With all of those outside influences and kind of voices in your own head, Lexi, what kind of eating and exercise regime had you developed for yourself by the time you hit puberty?
Yeah, I think I had a snap moment when I was a child. I had a lot going on growing up. When my parents got divorced, I was forced to look at different ways of living and I guess different parenting styles as well, that I kind of had to grow up really quickly. I remember having a pep talk to myself at a really young age. I must have been about 8 or 9, and I've always been an observer, which I guess that's what the eating disorder gave me as well. You're an observer of the world, where I kind of looked within and I went, I'm going to have to get some structure and some control to my life. So from a young age, I joined the cross country team, and much to, I guess, my personality type, I showed up every day. So I must have been about 9 and I started running. And I remember learning a lot about commitment and a lot about discipline of just showing up every single day. But this relationship that I started to have was not so much fun. I would look at sports as this punishment of go harder, improve yourself, be better. So it was even from such a young age that I got into this routine and this discipline of even sports as well.
Did your parents step in at this point?
I guess everyone was kind of busy in their own lives, and I was a very functional child. I guess when you do come from split parenting as well, you're not always seen. You live by two different sets of rules. And at that time, it wasn't that anything looked too abnormal. I think to everybody, it was Lexi showing up, Lexi's being healthy, and she's really disciplined with her life, which are, you know, some great characteristics, I think, to take forward when you go into your adult years, but not knowing that that might have been a coping strategy.
You switched schools and went to boarding school. Tell me about that decision. Why did your parents think that was a good idea?
Yeah, so I'd been at an all-girls school essentially my whole life, besides a few of my younger years. And wasn't that there was anything too wrong with the school. I've always had this personality type where I can make friends. I was warm, I was open, and there wasn't anything to do with that. However, there was a lot going on when I was growing up, and with schooling, I think it was just time for a change. It was when this disordered eating was really taking a hold of my life and it was becoming noted at school. So there were a lot of, I guess, comments from teachers and the school counsellor to kind of, I guess, it had reached a point where things were becoming notable, that some of these traits of the eating disorder that were developing were not normal. So I remember having a bit of an intervention with the school counsellor and my parents and talking about what was going on and whether this was the best place to continue my schooling. And I wanted a change. You know, there was a lot going on. I didn't realise at this point I was neck deep in an eating disorder because we never spoke about it. I didn't even know what that was. And it was around 13, 14 that we decided to make a change and go to Toowoomba to go to boarding school.
So you say that at that point, at 13, 14, although you didn't realise it, and maybe people around you didn't realise it, you were already neck deep in an eating disorder. If you could go back and do something for that young girl, what would you do? Like, what's now considered a wise intervention at that early stage, but still already a quite serious stage of an eating disorder?
Oh, that's such a lovely way to put it. And really interesting, I guess, even with my line of work now, working with teenagers, it is so easy for me to jump in and look at ways that I guess I would have liked to have been seen. So if I could have gone back and I guess looked at that version and seen what I needed at the time, I think it was a really good conversation and I guess some warmth and taking away this whole expectation of getting to an end point of life, because it was so focused on who you need to be in future, and scaling it back to who are you right now and what makes you happy. And I didn't quite have that at that time.
So your family and you thought it was a good idea to go to boarding school, which I imagine is a place that's got lots of rules and regimentation and structure. Was that a good fit for you?
It really was. I just had my 20-year high school reunion 2 weekends ago and just revisited. And the whole place, my experience there, I loved being with 400 other girls who were essentially my sisters, I guess there was so many amongst us that it was fantastic in the sense of, you know, you get some bonding, you get some good quality friends, but you also get lost among 400 other girls.
Did that change of setting change your approach to eating or exercise in any way?
Oh, absolutely. So this now gave me the chance to run with the eating disorder. No one could really question what I was doing. There were so many people around me. So in the sense you do get lost with 400 other girls, you know, you're all sitting at tables. It's a bit like Harry Potter style, to be honest. And I guess there's conversations going on where there were ways where I'd be looking out to help others at mealtimes or different secret pathways of even purging or, you know, escaping from actual mealtimes as well.
How much pressure were you feeling to do well academically as your schooling came to an end?
I thought it was everything for me. I guess having that literal mindset, Sarah, I believed you get in there, you study your hardest, and you will be able to get the career of your dreams. So I tried my hardest. I was school prefect, even in such a short time of attending a new school as well, of just showing up and putting everything into academia.
So it sounds like from your point of view, you were kind of doing everything right. You're working really hard academically. You're really highly disciplined and controlled over the way you eat and you exercise. But from an outsider's point of view, one of your teachers intervened. What was the conversation a teacher had with you in the midst of your exams that led to you being taken to a doctor?
Oh, it was a bit of a, I guess, kind of a shocking experience, really. It was the day of my QCS, so back then Queensland Core Skills, which I had built up in my head to be everything since I was probably about 7 years old. And I guess the lead up to that, because stress had always been my trigger for the eating disorder. So you become very rigid with your thoughts, you become very controlled, and particularly as these big events come in and you become more stressed, you try to quiet the noise by focusing on what you need to do. So my eating fell away and I needed to keep everything in order. I remember walking to my exam that morning. I don't know when the last time it was that I'd slept. I can't remember the last time that I ate, but I needed to turn up and perform. So I remember sitting down and I definitely would have been on the edge. You know, it felt like, you know, when you're waiting just to start a race, it was that ready, set, go. Except before the go, I got this page from the school nurse to come and see her. And I just remember that was just crippling. It was, no, you can't take away my focus. This is going to be the biggest day of my life right now. And I was taken from the hall to go and see the school nurse. And she'd told me that she'd organize a doctor's appointment and I wasn't going to sit exams that day. And that was fundamentally, I think, one of the most shocking experiences of what I'd known of life that far.
And I guess a really profound experience of feeling out of control. Someone has made a decision on your behalf without even talking to you about it. That must have felt scary. Or did it feel like a relief?
No, this is really actually, I guess, a good insight into the mindset of anorexia, because anorexia controls everything, as I had up until that point. Now, I didn't prepare for the intervention. I didn't know what was going to happen. And I was somebody that had always prepared at least two steps ahead. So when that happened, that just showed me that style of how fragile your control is when you have an all or nothing approach to life.
So what happened when you went to see this GP?
It was a little bit like Monopoly. It was go straight to hospital. Do not collect your clothes. Do not call home. We're going to admit you now. So I guess this was my first experience of people tell you what to do rather than thinking that you were in control.
And at that point, Lexi, you still didn't think you had an eating disorder. This was the world saying there was a problem. You didn't feel at that point that you had a problem.
At this point, I was in peak of anorexia. And anorexia is not the problem itself. When you were in peak anorexia, you were actually feeling good. Essentially, you're grasping onto something that is trying to make you have a feeling of peace or control when you can't manage the outside. So for me, this was absolutely barbaric. Like, this was diabolical that I was even being taken away from exams and put into hospital at this point.
Were you put in a psychiatric ward, or whereabouts in the hospital were you being cared for?
I was 16 years old and I was in Toowoomba, and eating disorder treatment is not like it is today. Nobody really knew what to do because nobody had seen it in this way. And at this point, I was at such a high medical risk that the GP thought that I was going to go to be put into hospital to get some nourishment, to restore my medical status and see what we're going to do from there. But the reality is, and this is something that I had to deal with even through my 20s, of medical will not take you for a mental health admission and mental health will not take you for a medical admission.
What, because you're so unwell physically, psychiatric care says that's not our problem, mm-hmm. but the regular emergency says this is a psychiatric disorder, not a physical one. Is that where you kind of fall between the cracks in that
yes.
way?
And that is a terrifying place to be when you are moments away from death, essentially.
So where did you end up being placed in that hospital the first time?
At that time, I was put into an adult mental health facility, and it was some very Stone Age treatment that I received for a 16-year-old girl who had anorexia. And this was an experience for me because I didn't know what anorexia was at this time. I genuinely thought that I could eat. I thought at any given time, if I need to, I can do what I like. But because anorexia was making me feel good, there was no need to step outside of the rules. I was still, I guess, in that whole peak experience. And it was a reality when I was put into hospital and I was greeted for the first time with a psychiatrist. And this is very confronting. I didn't have my parents with me. And here I was being treated for what was known as mental health. And I'd never even heard that word before. And the first thing the psychiatrist said to me, it was very short. I wouldn't say it was sweet, but she said to me, as soon as you can eat, you can go home. So that is a very, I guess, clear statement for something that is a complex and very life-threatening issue. So at that point, I was admitted to hospital and I had everything taken away from me. I mean, clothes. I had my pens, paper. Phones weren't prominent back then, so that wasn't an issue, but everything. I was given a hospital gown and put into bed, and that was the wording. I could eat and I could go home. It was a very dark room where it was, think of your old school treatment where you had nurses staring at you from the window and nobody talking to you. And I sat there, and many hours passed, and my doctor would come in once a day and said, have you eaten yet? And I would go to start a conversation, essentially my only human contact, and I'd say no. And she would say, well, we're done here for today. I'll come see you tomorrow. And this went on for a couple of weeks. You know, and this is such a intense journey for a 16-year-old to take of going, why can't I do something so simple? And it was the first time that I realised I'm not in control here anymore.
Once your mum and stepdad came back to the country, you were taken out of that hospital and had your first time of being admitted to an eating disorders clinic. What do you remember seeing when you arrived there?
I remember meeting my new psychiatrist there who was a lot more experienced with eating disorders. I remember he was a dad as well. And, you know, he did look at me as a 16-year-old girl. And, you know, he knew anorexia. He knew the signs, the symptoms, and had studied it. He was very well educated with eating disorders. And, you know, the first thing he said to me was, we're going to have to get you in for an admission. We're going to have to re-nourish you. You're kind of on this ride now where your control is being taken away. And he turned and he looked at me and he said, are you aware that this is a acute mental hospital, that this is what an eating disorder is? So I was admitted in there and I was put on the eating disorder program. And I think there were around 9 other, happened to be females at the time as well. And there were different age ranges as well. I think I was definitely the youngest, but I was going into this place of, I'm going to disappoint some people here. And I'm really going to hold up my own guard because everything they're asking me to do here goes against everything I'm wanting to do.
What about being around other people who had perhaps been ill with anorexia longer than you had? Did that almost have a kind of counter effect of exposing you to ways of controlling your eating, which were even more damaging than you'd already developed yourself? Can it work that way?
It really did for me. So again, going in at 16 years old, and I could tell you, I guess in such a pure sense of, I just didn't want to eat because it was going to make me fat. And I equated fat to a feeling. And when I went in there, there were some people who had been on their own journey and experience for many, many, many years. So everybody had their own rituals, everybody had their own routine, and we all had to eat together. And it was like putting some illnesses that, if you know the ins and outs of anorexia, it can be very competitive. So it brought up a lot of, I guess, new rules, new ways of thinking, new ways of self-punishment that I wasn't doing good enough and I had to do better. So I say this openly, I walked in there not knowing anything about anorexia and I walked out with a degree of different rules and things that I'd picked up.
And you say that not meaning you had a degree in terms of insight that could then free you from those ways of thinking, but actually just more restrictive and self-punishing behaviours around eating.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was what I thought anorexia had started with just some different rules and rituals, became to this intense, disciplined boot camp experience that I had to live my life by 24 hours a day.
Did you actually get to finish high school, Lexi?
Yep. So I didn't finish high school. I actually was pulled out around June of that year and I never went back. So that day in Toowoomba where I went to hospital, I think I was allowed one allowance to go to my school formal and that was it. I guess from having performed in my earlier years, it did all work out in the end, but officially didn't graduate from high school. And I always wanted to be a flight attendant. I eventually completed my first hospital admission, which was just a band-aid experience. That was essentially me putting on enough weight and I guess ticking some boxes of showing on the outside that, look, I think I'm recovered, which I genuinely thought I was. Now I'm off to live life. I went to university for a bit and then I finally got to live my dream as a flight attendant. So I was 18 years old and accepted to Virgin Blue and moved down to Melbourne. And this is where I got to know a lot about eating disorders and the whole inner world that you're experiencing. I guess I tried it the first time. I went to Toowoomba, the eating disorder followed me. I went to Melbourne and the eating disorder followed me again. So I flew for a little bit there, found myself in hospital. And then again, I circled back into finally making my dream to become a flight attendant for Emirates and found myself over in Dubai when I was 21 years old. And this was where I hit the peak experience of the sickest with my illness yet. And a really profound experience in life too, because we've just spoken about what your goal was in life. And it was to be this flight attendant for Emirates. So I remember exactly how my mind worked of thinking, you know, the whole process that I'd grown up really of tick these boxes, work really hard, achieve your dream job. Now I remember the day that I did, and because I'd put all my eggs in one basket, the crash that came with that. I remember the first day of going, you've achieved your goals here, Lexi. Now what are you going to do for the rest of your life? And I stayed for a year in Dubai and fell so deeply into anorexia that by the time I came home, I found myself at the lowest that I'd ever been weight-wise and also my health disposition. I was told that I had less than 24 hours to live.
How do you remember receiving that news? Like, was it your brain able to take that in or what was it like to hear that? It's such a shocking thing to be told.
To be honest, when you get to that point, when you've really taken your mind and your body that far, you're not really operating on the same human level as most people are. You can somewhat hear some noises come in. You can somewhat, I guess, have a little bit of experience. But by that point, you're too far gone. You're sitting in a whole different vibration and a whole different level that I think you were just waiting for the moments of you're about to pass as well. So it's a very, you know, it's a very deep feeling to sit with. But I can tell you, you are operating on a different frequency at that one where you just don't take it in.
This is something I remember Warren Ward, who you co-wrote this book with, really emphasising when he was a guest on Conversations, that at a certain point of malnutrition, your brain can't think logically anymore. Mm. It can't have a perspective that your brain's not operating the way it could because it's literally been starved.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. But the feeling that you experience is so much peace. All of a sudden, all the noises are gone. You can't quite get the voices in, and everything around you just becomes a blur. So that's the end goal of anorexia, essentially. And I know for myself and people that I've worked with, you're always searching for that inner peace. So once you get to that state, you were just so inwards on your journey that you can't hear anything else around you.
So what happened after that, Lexi? How did you make it through that next 24, then 48 hours and on?
I remember, and this is where I started such a deep journey in life. Like, I was not a spiritual person to begin with, and this is something where it gave me, I guess, a reason to believe that there is something deeper and there's something beyond my control. And this is, as I've said, this is coming from such a linear, a skeptical mindset that that was not even a pathway for me. So I remember being made comfortable, and I was monitored a lot at this time. Again, we fell into that issue of mental health could not take me, and also medical hospital could not take me as well because of this risk category. So I was made comfortable and I had a physician who was seeing me. And, you know, your vitals are checked a lot. I remember blood pressure was going down and temperature was going down. And from what I recall, because you, again, are not in that conscious space as well, it was very ambient. But I remember hearing voices around me. And at this point, people are talking about you, not to you. And it was actually a comment from a doctor. And I've never really been fond of, I guess, people underestimating me. And I remember the doctor saying, she's going to pass. This is it. And it was kind of in this way that I didn't really like his tone, Sarah. And I remember thinking, no one's going to tell me what to do. And I think I just remember, and it was just such this unconscious response of going, one more time. And I get goosebumps when I say this. I remember falling asleep. And there's no rhyme or rhythm to life as to sometimes how your thoughts are, how you can really focus on yourself. I remember waking up the next morning, my blood pressure started to go up. My vitals started to change ever so slightly. And there was like this little oomph that had come into me. And I don't know what happens in that space, but something had definitely checked in of going, this is now or this is never, Lexi. And it was a slow progression where life started to come back to me. But once health came back, I was hit with a mental storm. So I did what I needed to do yet again. I gained the weight. I ticked the boxes. And I'm now years into this illness. So you're not making the same chemicals that you are in your brain. Like, your serotonin is not going up. There's no dopamine. You're just not having a good time. And I remember sitting in this dark, dark place.
You started seeing a new therapist after that hospital admission. What was different about his approach?
Yeah, and I'm a big believer, even in my work today, you have to be ready. You really have to be ready to meet the right people, to hear the right things, and to, I guess, take accountability for yourself. So that didn't hit me till age 25, when I was so sick and tired of being sick and tired. Essentially, I was still sitting with the same patterning in my head, but my body was not responding the same way. So I'm not getting the, I guess, results, because that's how my mind was driven, of anorexia. And, you know, I really was in this such a negative, dark hole space in life. Like, we had tried everything for treatment. We'd gone interstate, you know, I tried every hospital program and nothing was working. And, you know, at this stage, Sarah, it became a bit comical as well, because my parents never gave up. We were always trying a new person or trying a new modality. And we were a very conventional family as well. So it wasn't so much into, I guess, any other health methods that we look at today that, you know, alternate health is a little bit more accepted. And we ended up meeting this other therapist. And he was, essentially his background was Chinese medicine and acupuncture. And I remember going along and thinking, all right, what can you do for me that nobody else had done? Again, I'm not in the right headspace at this time too, but that's how I used to feel when I'd battle professionals. And I turned up and I met this man, and he didn't want to know anything about the eating disorder. And I was a bit challenged, Sarah, as well. Like, I had repeated my story to surplus of professionals. This is what I did. I was a professional, I guess, at my own eating disorder, and trying to see, you know, I guess I would challenge them of going, can you handle me?
What did he want to talk about then?
He just sat down and I could just see within himself, he was just a very calm, happy person. you know, I'd always been met with professionals where, you know, we lived on the edge. You know, it was a life and death situation for us. I always had a bag packed at the door to go to hospital at any given time. And my family experienced that too. So when you're met with a health professional, it is very serious. It is very engaged. But when you're met with professionals, there's a bit of guilt and shame because it seems so simple that you can eat and that you should eat. And it's very misunderstood. Whereas this man, he just sat there and just wanted to know about me. And I remember being very challenging to him going, what is wrong with you? Why are you not asking me about the eating disorder? Why don't you want to know about my history? And he just started talking about just different things. Like, and I couldn't control that situation. And I remember walking away going, that was such a strange experience, but I wanted to go back again.
He suggested that you take up yoga. What was your response to that at the time?
This was so interesting because I must have done therapy with him for about 3 years, and he spoke about yoga on the first day before I could even consider the idea. So he spent this time of just getting to know me, and it was looking at the traits of what I had at the eating disorder that were actually, I guess, really wonderful traits. You know, to be an intense person, that's a gift. To have commitment, to have discipline and structure, that is also a gift. So he would look at it in this way that he never, I guess, diminished me. He just wanted to see how I could use my potential as well. So we'd speak about yoga and, you know, you're confidently incorrect in your 20s, right? You know a lot about life. Not so much, you know, and I'd sit there and I'd go, no, yoga is boring. If I'm going to be exercising, I'm going to be running. We're talking about burning calories here. We're talking about intensity. And this man was intense himself. And, you know, he had had a practice, you know, it wasn't yoga, but he was very into his Tai Chi. And I remember going, no, that's not for me. But as I started to get into recovery, which was actually this discovery process, I started to get deeper and deeper and deeper into, I guess, heaviness that I had not addressed for years. So as
heaviness, you mean emotional heaviness, or what do you mean by heaviness?
Heaviness through emotions, because essentially I had been numbing myself by not eating. So again, that peace feeling that I was trying to, I guess, obtain was also a feeling of lightness that I wanted, not just through my body, but in my mind. And that is the experience of anorexia itself. So as I started to eat and I guess started to feel things as well, I realized I was carrying a lot of heaviness. Now, where that had come from, my childhood or what I'd learned about life during the way, it was all starting to show up. And I was still in this very black and white linear mindset of going, how do I manage life? Now, life wasn't meant to be managed. Life is meant to be felt, to be enjoyed. But I remember when he spoke about yoga, I only went because I had tried every other option. And I remember turning up and, you know, I sat there and I felt like I was wasting time. It wasn't like I went to yoga and all my problems were being solved. I just remember sitting there, and that was the experience. It was sitting there, nowhere to be, nothing to do. And I just didn't like it. This is a waste of time. And I packed up my yoga mat and left. So that was that. And I loved going back to my therapist to go, done it.
Didn't work.
What's your next step? But I still liked the guy. So I continued to turn up for sessions. So life hit me a little bit harder where I thought, why don't you go back and give things a try again? And essentially the long of the short is I found a style that I got into that I remember walking into class one day, and it wasn't a fun time that I was living in. I was really in some of my dark days of recovery, and recovery are darker days than the eating disorder itself. But I took the class, I got through, and I remember walking away and went, huh, I am experiencing this feeling of lightness that had nothing to do with my weight. It had nothing to do with the way that I controlled, but it was like I could just take a breath of fresh air that I'd never been able to take in my whole life and experience calm and peace. And it was like this penny drop moment to go, you know what? This is what I have been trying to find through anorexia my whole life.
So through your experiences on the yoga mat and these ongoing conversations with the therapist, you kind of are aware of all these intense feelings that you'd tried to block down or subdue or manage with the anorexia. So what did you do with them once they appeared? You know, once they're showing up because you're not controlling them with the disordered eating, how did you handle them?
Well, this is where the real work started, Sarah. And I guess this is where if, you know, you're going through recovery, it's I could finally be in a place where I had to take accountability for my life, for my feelings and for my actions. And this is where I was at. I guess the benefit was I had somebody there to guide me, to sit with me. But essentially, I was the one that had to show up and do my own recovery. So I remember going, all right, if I can commit to anorexia, I can commit to something that is going to make me feel good and build me up. And you're not recovered yet. So I took my whole yoga experience too with how I'd taken everything else in life as well of going, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this well. Because I hadn't quite reached that yogi experience yet. But the benefit is I decided to show up on my mat every single day. So when the anorexia wasn't serving me, I would turn up and I was in a terrible place of recovery. I think a lot of people think, you know, you eat some food, you gain some weight, you learn some different skills in life, it's magical. No, no, no. It is really time to look within. So I remember turning up every single day for 3 years and I would cry on my mat. I was undoing trauma in my body. I was dealing with eating that was no longer in my control anymore. And I learned, I guess, the real power of just keep showing up for yourself. And that's where I started to do, I guess, essentially the unpacking of the emotional load and learning I would get through and nothing was spiral out of control. So yoga became such this gift in my life that keeps giving.
When you were still pretty early, still pretty fresh in your recovery, you discovered that you were pregnant. Mm. Was that a shock?
That was still a shock to this day. So I was told medically I couldn't have kids. That was just not on the cards for me after the experience of everything that I'd gone through. And finding out I was pregnant with Mabel was something that I hadn't been prepared for. And as somebody that thinks about everything they do, thought about every action, thought about, you know, everything that they were going to eat, this was something I thought about long, hard and deep of this is going to be for the rest of your life. So it was a big thing to take on, particularly I was about 1 year into recovery, which is not a long time on your eating disorder recovery journey.
And talk about ultimate bodily transformation of which you have no control, pregnancy. What was the experience for you of being in a pregnant body?
This is for somebody that is going through eating disorder recovery. This is like having a pit of snakes and jumping into it. So I quite like that actually, because you didn't have time to think about it. You just had to learn to go through the discomfort. And that's something that I model today is, you know, recovery. It is finding comfort in the discomfort because it is messy. It is hard. And throw in some pregnancy, which is beyond your control. This is how I learned to trust life and essentially trust myself. So it wasn't so much got through pregnancy. It was a journey where I'm monitoring these changes. You know, I'm observing what's going on. And to form a life, I think, in your body, that was my daughter. And, you know, to see how wonderful, how, I guess, the body can change and grow to adapt to something that is so normal and natural was an experience of a lifetime to make a level of recovery I never thought was going to be possible.
Tell me about the work that you do now, Lexi.
Yeah, so work now, it has just morphed into something that I guess always wanted when I was going through recovery. And I did make a promise, and I'm a girl of my word. I said, if I ever make a recovery, I promise to give back to others to shorten the journey that I've been on. I'm okay with experimenting and doing things difficultly, but when it comes to this, I just want to shorten the period and know that, you know, others are not ineffective for what they're going through. So work today, I guess, I went through this series of self-study, essentially, myself. So I went on to study yoga and become a yoga teacher, spending a lot of time over there in India. I went to study clinical nutrition for a deeper reasoning of nutrition. I really wanted to know what nutrition could do for my body. I'd been taught, again, this analytical mindset of input versus output and that very black and white approach. But when I was starting to heal, It was more, I wanted to know about my brain health. I wanted to know about how there was a connection between nutrition and mental well-being. So I did all these bouts of studies that I didn't know at the time that was going to land to be a beautiful, rewarding career pathway. And with my own experience of going through what I went through, I would never want anyone to feel alone. The missing element for me was that human connection, to sit down and go, hey, we're all on a journey. This is just something you're experiencing. Let's work through this together. So work for me now is just guiding others in a way that I've known to get through some difficult issues, and very heartfelt and rewarding.
How much of yourself do you see in the people that you work with?
I work with a lot of teenagers, and that is such a passion space for me, of just empowering young women that, you know, because eating disorders can hit in that age bracket where you're really finding out who you are. And it's so often that I work with some of them, and, you know, I've got some current ones who are sitting their year 11 and year 12 exams, and it is just a joy talking to them to see their commitment to life and, you know, where they want to be, and just seeing where they're at and knowing that I've been there too. So it's, I guess, this sense that I have now to jump in there, listen to where they are, and just work through it together. And that had brought me comfort. You know, when I first met my therapist, he'd gone through some hard times too. To know that someone had been through hard times and got through it because of a thinking style, that just kind of extends out to that, and feels like a real experience as well.
Is such a dangerous condition, anorexia, you know, and all the eating disorders bring their own risks, their own long-term dangers. In your understanding, is it something that people can fully recover from, or is an eating disorder always something that people are going to have to manage in some way? What's your experience?
For me, I've made a full recovery. I don't think about food, weight, or shape. I don't have an analytical thinking style, and I see the world in color. Now, for me, that was a big yogic path. I mean, I've been a practicing yogi now for over 12 years, and it's something that you can't explain because it's not analytical, which is entirely away from the eating disorder. So you turn up and you can't control that. You just know that something is working at a deeper level, and it is creating a feeling that, I guess, is more fulfilling than what I got from the eating disorder. It's also matching my intensity as well, because you show up, there is no end result to yoga. So you take away that mindset of thinking that you've got to reach an end point that I was so talking about with my work career. So for me, it got passed onto that where, you know, I got to blossom on this journey of self-discovery, and I don't have any symptoms of eating disorder as well. There is without a doubt life challenges, and I've probably had a harder one since my eating disorder, but that just gave me the training grounds of looking within, learning about self-regulation, and knowing that you can be free from, I guess, an analytical mental illness that completely consumed my brain and my mind.
And when it comes to raising your own daughter, Lexi, how do you talk about food and eating and health with her?
Yeah, it's really, I'm smiling here because I look at it as a bit of a journey. And I know now as a parent, like, you try not to put your own traumas or your own background as to what you've gone through on your child. So when it comes to my daughter, Mabel, she's just incredible. She's this down-to-earth kid and just very inquisitive. And I think because I've not had such a highlight or a pedestal on food, it's all food has its place. Let's experience this. She's got a very relaxed approach. You know, we can keep chocolate in our house. We can keep all sorts of things, and she's not going to run to the fridge and eat it all in one hit. She can moderate, and she's found this balance and she knows her limits. And I think I definitely model that as well. So I believe my own philosophy is, going through what I've gone through, even as a clinical nutrition, I believe in balance. So there is chocolate in my diet. There's ice cream in my diet. There's fruits, there's vegetables, there's all sorts of things. It's seen as food. This is how we nourish our bodies. And it seems a bit basic, but this is a real win for someone who's had an eating disorder. You eat when you're hungry and you stop when you're full. And that took me years to master. So that's just something that I get it to sink into. And we talk about feelings a lot. So hopefully that's kind of setting a trajectory for her. This is really special to me. I wasn't able to see the sunrise when I was in hospital. I didn't have that freedom of walking out of my front door. And you develop this deeper sense of gratitude, I think, when you go through recovery, because some of your basic life needs that we take for granted every day were just taken away when you're sitting in a hospital bed. So for me, waking up every morning, seeing that sunrise, that just does it for me.
Lexi, thank you so much for sharing your story on Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Lexi Crouch was my guest on Conversations today, and her book, written with psychiatrist Dr. Warren Ward, who's also been a guest on Conversations, is called Renourish, a complete and compassionate guide to recovery from eating disorders. This conversation was recorded on the lands of the Turrbal and Yagara peoples and produced by Jen Leake. Our executive producer is Nicola Harrison. I'm Sarah Kanoski. Thanks for listening.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.